back on the mic, and we are so we did. Oh, my mic isn't even
okay.
I'm not back on.
She's struggling.
Totally, the mic was totally not by my face. So we posted a question box, and I got like 4 different questions about GLP-1 side effects. And I get a lot of questions on GLP-1 side effects because people want the benefits of them, but they don't want to consider the state of their body going onto them. Or
no one tells them that that's important, though.
Exactly. And also, it's just like, oh, no, sure, everything will be fine. And like, I've had some people be very upset, not at me, but like, when I educate on GLPs, people say, oh, my God, I'm so glad that you're talking about this. My friend's mom died of pancreatitis, or like I had, you know, which isn't just just the GLP. There's other things that are likely going on prior to that. But like I had awful reactions that took me weeks or months to recover from, all of these things, because you guys, they are a very strong compound. And when you start them at higher doses, like I have a client that decided to go through MIDI, I think, or L, I think it is.
There's so many.
Whatever. One of the online ones. They prescribed her 2.5 milligrams to start. We start clients at 0.5 milligrams. And we usually do not do that until we've done work with the client and see that their body seems to be in a place. Because I would much rather start someone at that and they experience nothing. Awesome. That is exactly what I want. Let's increase dose a little bit. Mm-hmm. Right? And so we're going to talk about some very common and some not so common symptoms and side effects that we got from people. And what typically is going on. Because I would say this first one that we're going to talk about is probably one of the top 1 to 2 side effects I get from people when they start a GLP.
Yeah, before we dive in, we just want to remind you, if you're new to the show, what you can expect on the Health Revival Show, because maybe this is the first time you have ever tuned in. Oh. And we just want to let you know how we roll. So we have 3 episodes a week. We are going to hit our 1,000th episode mid-May, which is so fun. Typically, you're going to expect some tough love. We are Liz and Becca. We are going to tell you like it is. Sometimes we put our tinfoil hat on and sometimes we get a little woo-woo. But most of the time, we just help people heal. So we have interviews. We also have Friday Fire, Monday Mindset. But a lot of what we also do is functional health education. You will get some business coaching. You'll get some mom life. You'll get to know a little bit about what's going on in our personal lives on this episode, because we believe in being unapologetically authentic. Sometimes I slip in some swear words. Sorry if your kids are in the car, but they come out. And sometimes they're appropriate. And so I always think of my mom every time I say the F word. And I'm sorry because she hates that word. But sometimes you need to have some color. Anyways, if you're a longtime listener and you have not left a 5-star rating and review, what we would ask you to do right now is hit pause. If you're on your Apple podcast, scroll down, give a 5-star rating and review. You will also be entered to win a monthly giveaway. So we are doing those boxes again, and we're excited to get this started up. We hadn't done it in a while, but the way that we grow this podcast without accepting, you know, money for advertisements and then interrupting your listening experience is to have you rate, review, subscribe, and share the show. Sharing is so, so helpful. And we would love for you to tag us on social media at the Poop Queen, at the Hormone Queen, so that we can also see who is listening. And if you have questions like what we are going to answer for you today, you can put those in our question boxes too. We are going to be back to our live episodes, which will be Tuesdays at noon starting next week. If you are looking for one-on-one help, everything we're saying to you is like, this makes so much sense. And I want to get to the root cause. I want to heal. I want to be strategic and stop wasting time, effort, energy, money, and finances, throwing things at the wall because I saw on Instagram. I can't, you guys, with the amount of people who are like, I saw this reel and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with your blood work. There's no correlation or indication with anything I said in this reel and your symptoms and your labs here. So help me make sense of this. No, seriously, we want to be strategic with everything that we do because your body is a fine-tuned symphony that God has designed. When we throw off that orchestration, right, that he has designed, things don't go well. And there's a cost to everything, just like using GLP-1s. My quarrel right now with the conventional medicine space and all these online pharmacies is that you don't even have to do any foundational work to show them that, like,
work.
You're going to stop eating like an asshole. You're going to stop binge drinking on the weekends. You are going to start exercising so that you maintain your muscle mass, that you are going to eat enough because maybe you're a chronic dieter and your body is already in the tank in terms of your metabolism is slowed, your thyroid is slowed, your adrenals are just hanging on by a thread, and you wonder why your hormones aren't functioning well. We've got to, this, I believe that peptides are a privilege. And I believe that when we use them in the right time, the right strategy, they're very powerful tools. Beck and I are very transparent. We take testosterone, we take GLP-1s, microdose them, we cycle them. We are also so intentional about our health in many other ways that we don't get these side effects. And many of our clients, in the way that we guide them, don't get these side effects. So we are going to talk about it today. We're going to give you things that you can do. And we have a great GLP-1 done right guide on our website, fitmom.co. Look under the resource section. There's a ton of information there that you can go to and find related to many, many topics, because we hear from people every single day that are struggling, that are not informed. And if you know someone who's considering going on a GLP-1, please share this episode with them. If you know someone who is on 7.5 milligrams a week, 5 milligrams a week, and they've been there, they've been left at that dose, please share this episode with them, because I don't believe that these tools should be utilized with negligence. I think that they should be utilized with strategy. And so many people, just like proton pump inhibitors or birth control, are not informed of the cost and the impact that it's going to have on your body, and that we should be using these things more as short-term tools and not long-term crutches. So that's my little speech to you. And now let's dive in. We've got four really juicy things. The number one is really juicy to discuss here. And we know that so many people are more on the constipated side, but research is actually showing about 4% experience the diarrhea effects. So it's a small percentage. Maybe you're like hearing more
than I, given the, and I'm sure like what is actually reported, right, versus what is experienced is, I mean, they have to gather that information.
Right.
And so a lot of people think that there will be more gastroparesis, because that is the big fear mongering around GLPs in terms of extreme slow gastroparesis is basically a paralysis of the motility and the digestive system and being able to have bowel movements. It's very dangerous actually to experience that. But how GLPs work is they slow gastric emptying. That's why you get full so fast, because they essentially make food kind of stay in the stomach a little bit longer and not release further into the digestive system. And so you get full a lot easier, right? And the thing is with this, not only does it reduce appetite signaling from that, but it increases intestinal fluid secretion and it changes bile flow. Mm-hmm. And so downstream, what that can look like is that food sits more in the digestive system and it ferments. And then you get this like dumping syndrome into the small intestine. It's essentially osmotic diarrhea is what it's called. But you can also be very bloated. Like there's a lot of people that are barely eating on GLPs and are bloated because of this situation.
Maybe let's throw in there that bile is responsible for estrogen clearance. And so then you end up in an estrogen dominant state that makes your bile sluggish and more like stagnant, peanut butter-like. And then if you go off of these things, you're wondering why I have erect digestive system and you're blaming the GLP-1, but really in fact it's the user and it's the approach and it's that you weren't, and it's not your fault, right? But that the providers aren't educating you. I love that Megan gave the stamp of approval and read the GLP-1 Done Right guide, gave feedback, we updated it. Like Vital Medical is such a great partner, and I know she goes above and beyond with due diligence for people who are on these things. And I just wish that conventional medicine would do that.
Yeah. Our medical team's amazing. They absolutely are. They've approved both of our guides. So my hormone replacement therapy guide and Liz's GLP-1 guide that we put together, like they have approved both of them. They are the medical teams. They are the prescribers. We are the guiders of our clients, right? And so it's so nice to have that on our side. And if you are looking for those resources, you can find them on our website under the resources tab. Fitmom.co is our website. And we have multiple resources, multiple guides that are 15, 20 plus pages on how to use GLPs properly, on how to approach HRT properly. So go check those out. But another possibility with the carbohydrate fermentation that can happen, essentially the slower upper GI function that happens with GLPs causes more gas production. It causes more of an osmotic load, water load essentially. And this happens a lot more if people are doing protein shakes or sugar alcohols, like in protein bars and in all the processed foods, are doing more fiber powders. Some people try to fiber up because they're having diarrhea or constipation. It can worsen that. And then bile dysregulation is another piece that will start to cause this. So GLPs influence gallbladder emptying and bile timing. And so if bile is not released properly, you will have fat malabsorption, you will have loose stools, and you will have urgency. Okay. And so this is why sometimes in a lot of our cases, we will put in ox bile, we put in bile blends with taurine and, you know, digestive enzymes and these things, because at the end of the day, you probably already weren't processing bile very well or releasing bile very well, or you didn't have a gallbladder to begin with. And if that is the case, then we have a whole nother discussion, and you have to be very careful with going on GLPs and make sure that you are supporting the system that's surrounding the GLPs as much as possible, because they interplay with so many different systems in the body, like immune systems, digestive symptoms, liver, gallbladder, and detox systems. And so you have to be really careful what you're doing. Or else, yeah, you will end up with side effects.
Yeah. The other big thing that we see with the microbiome is a shift of bacteria. So if we think about it for a moment in terms of small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, when food is sitting in the intestines, it's not moving through the digestive tract appropriately within a good transit time. So anybody who has more of the constipation going in should definitely be like overloading themselves with supports to keep your transit time, you know, moving well. But again, if you're at a low dose, you're not going to have as much of this side effect from that constipation, really, really slowed gastric emptying. But food is sitting there, it's fermenting. What is happening here is that it's allowing bacteria to feast upon this, and then they start to overgrow and they crowd out good bacteria. So we see that there can be a microbiome imbalance that starts to shift here. And there are studies that show increased fermentation species. We don't want that, because that again can lead to things like either small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or it could be like a hydrogen, a sulfur, a methane even. We could also see altered short chain fatty acid balance. And that's very important, because these postbiotics play a large role in inflammation, cancer prevention, signaling in the body. Everything in our body is signaling something. So not only is that going to shift the microbiome, but it's also going to worsen that bloating. It can result, like she said, in the obstipation, which is the worst form of constipation. That's where you get a flooding of water and this loose stools. And then also you're experiencing more of like the odor and sulfur smelling gas. So if it smells like rotten egg, that's your telltale sign that things are shifting in a negative way. So what I would do there is I'd probably use something like MSM at a low dose just to trial and see, could I break down some of those sulfites and get rid of that sulfur for a smell. I would also make sure, as we already mentioned, we're supporting liver, we're supporting bile flow, and then that you're supporting, of utmost importance, your digestive capacity to break down, digest, absorb nutrients. So stomach acid here is really imperative, as well as maybe digestive enzymes. Again, go to the GLP-1 Done Right guide. I break it all down there for you. And this is something that I think as a foundational, you know, as a foundation to using a GLP-1 needs to be in place, as well as electrolytes, as well as strength training at least 3 times a week. Like, I helped one of my really good friends with using a GLP-1 for the first time this week. And I was like, I am telling you right now, here are boxes of Element. You need to be drinking at least 2 or 3 of these a day, and you got to get your ass into the gym. Like, I gave her a whole speech on it, because yes. I'm like, if you don't go to the gym, what's going to happen is you're going to catabolize muscle. You're just in that breaking down state. You need to be at least 3 times a week. And when we say resistance training, guys, we're not talking about 5-pound weights. Yes, if the only thing you can do is, you know, body weight, then what I need you to do is find things around your house to add some level of resistance extra, or do more time under tension, do holds, static holds, right? Wall sits, could be, you know, lunges that you're doing and you're holding, but you need to create extra resistance so that you're stimulating your muscle and you're not breaking it down. And with that is also adequate levels of protein. So if I was not working with anybody and I'm only doing one thing with my diet, I am making sure that I'm getting adequate protein at 0.8 grams per pound of my body weight. That's where I would really target. I don't think you need to be all the way to the 1 gram per pound of your body weight. I think that's kind of the sweet spot there, is 0.8 grams. So get a calculator out. You can go to totaldailyenergyexpenditure.com. That's an easy place if you want to get how many calories you should be consuming. But we know that with this slowed gastric emptying, our appetite downregulates. And for some people, this gives them a leg up. And for some people, it's really helpful with the food noise. But what you don't understand is that if you are a chronic dieter, like all of these ladies that we seem to work with, who are afraid to eat, right? Because we were raised, I'm an 80s baby, Becca, we're 3 weeks apart. We were raised in the extreme diets, 1200 calories, fat-free everything, fat will make you fat. And we wonder why we have some liver bile issues.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I think everything revolves around my liver. So that is some stuff, and we'll kind of reiterate at the end, but consideration, like Liz was saying, digestive enzymes, stomach acid support, bitters, taurine, bile blends can be very helpful in these cases. But at the end of the day, you have, like, if you're having major digestive upset, I know you want to lose weight. I get it, guys. But like the things that these people are enduring just to lose weight, not okay. You're damaging long-term health. So at the cost of weight loss, like you feel miserable. Oh, but the scale is going down. So we really need to consider what we're doing at this point, and if we need to dive deeper into what's going on underneath in the gut. Waking at night is the next one. So started a GLP-1, started waking more at night. The most common reason I think this is likely going on is because you're getting blood sugar dips. So I'd ask, one, when are you taking the GLP, right? So if you are taking it at night, you might want to consider taking it with a meal during the day. You might be someone that experiences more hypoglycemia and you're dropping too low on blood sugars. Your body hasn't learned how to stabilize them yet. And so that is one tip that you can do, is like, usually, yes, you want to take it in the morning on an empty stomach, or sometimes we'll have people take it before bed. But in this case, I would probably have you take it closer to the morning time, maybe with a meal. So GLPs increase insulin secretion. They reduce hepatic glucose output and they suppress appetite. So overnight, you can end up in like a reactive hypoglycemia where your blood sugar drops too low and then cortisol rises to try and get your body to release more glucose from the liver so that it stabilizes itself, because too low of blood sugar is dangerous to the body. It's dangerous to the brain. And so the body is going to spike cortisol, because cortisol has a direct relationship to increasing glucose. So it's likely why you're waking up. A lot of people experience like waking up between 2 and 4 a.m., heart racing, cortisol, adrenaline type spikes, wired but tired, very classic pattern. The other thing Liz already touched on, electrolytes, 1000%. Like, you need to understand that these medications essentially waste sodium. And so you are excreting higher levels of sodium when you are on them. And so they will not only reduce appetite, but some people take such a high dose, they can barely drink on these medications. It's crazy. Like, shame on you, doctors that are prescribing people that high of doses. And also shame on people for not being really honest with their body on what's happening. Like, again, the things that we do for weight loss, but it increases also GI losses for some people. And a lot of people don't take in adequate sodium to begin with. And so you will have low plasma volume and you will have cortisol spikes at night. A little tip I have a lot of my clients do that have high stress is I have them take a half a packet of electrolytes with dinner. So I have them drink either, hopefully if they eat dinner early enough, I have them drink water after dinner with electrolytes in it, or I'll have them drink it, you know, with dinner so that they're getting extra electrolytes closer to bed. I see this happen more often with women that are high stress and low blood pressure. I tend to see this a lot with people that have chronic stress in their body. And so in turn, their body over time lowers heart rate and blood pressure, and leaner women. So sodium, potassium, fluids often fixes this pretty well. The last thing is actually autonomic stimulation. So this is something that's a little bit more complex. I think we might need to do another podcast as a whole on this. GLPs can alter dopamine signaling and they can alter serotonin. And people can feel very flat. We see this more on semaglutide. It has a stronger effect on that. People will essentially feel depressed on it. But it affects essentially your nervous system and also the vagal tone. And so for some people, they might end up more jittery or like essentially a higher resting heart rate. And GLPs in general increase your heart rate, because guess what? Losing weight and managing blood sugars is hard work for the body.
Your body wants homeostasis. It is an expensive job to burn fat and to lose weight. And a lot of things are shifting when this happens, right? When we are losing fat, we're also in a way detoxing very heavily, because when those cells shrink or burst, right, toxins get eliminated. And for some people, hear me when I say this, this is why your body is not responding to the GLP-1, because your body knows that this isn't safe. You got too much junk sequestered. You're not detoxing appropriately. Maybe you have a lot of toxins that are being stored. It could be mold. It could be heavy metals. It could be a variety of things. And you're like, why am I not losing weight on a GLP-1? Because your body is outsmarting you to keep you safe. And you think that the answer, or maybe your provider thinks the answer, is to just up your dose, up your dose, up your dose. How about we go back to the drawing board? We wean off, we get off, we do the foundational work, we address the root causes, we work on the lifestyle and the habits and the behavior, and then we bring it back in. And oh, seemingly they respond. If you're someone who's been on a GLP-1 for more than 3 months and you're not responding, I would highly encourage you to get off of it, work with someone on the foundational pieces, and then try to bring it back in at a lower dose, because you may have flooded your receptors and it is not going to work. You're going to just spin your wheels. You're going to waste so much money. I mean, some people, their insurance is covering this, which, yeah, they've made the most out of, they've made the most profit, right? Big Pharma has made the most profit off of these GLP-1s than any other drug. But at the end of the day, they are not intended to be used at these very high doses. I know that Retatrutide, which will be on the market soon, the highest dose there is 15 milligrams. And I just think that is crazy. When I try to explain this to people and put this into like perspective, for Retatrutide even, the starting dose in the research is 2 milligrams. We call this the GLP-3, by the way. Okay. Same with Tirzepatide, where they're looking at 2.5 milligrams starting dose. Highest in the research, is it 12 and a half or 15?
I think it's 15.
I think it's 15 as well. Yeah, 15. Yeah. So if someone like myself is taking 1 milligram a week, that's more of a maintenance dose. And sometimes I cycle down, sometimes I cycle up, because I do believe in cycling, take a little break, bring it back in, seasons, whatever. Imagine that's 15 weeks of a peptide for me that you're taking in 1 week. The question is not how much should I be taking? The question is, why do I need to take that much?
And the one thing I'll say is I've seen people that have gotten to that dose and had to stop it because they ran out of it or whatever it might be, and tried going back to that dose 2 to 3 weeks later, severe reactions. That tells you immediately that your body has adapted to that dose and that it likely is not going to work at that level. And it's too much for your body. Like, Liz and I and our practice are firm believers in lowest effective dose possible, because if you fix the other dysfunction, guess what? You won't need as big of a dose. And you won't need to pay for that big dose. And your body won't need to handle and tolerate that big dose, because you have created so much inflammation or insensitivity at the cell level that essentially what they're doing is they're having to come at you with a huge sledgehammer versus like a tiny little prick. Mm-hmm. Because your body can't hear it because there's so much else going on.
And you shouldn't be gaining 5 pounds if you go off of it for a week.
No, like there might be some fluctuations, and I've seen that, because I will say GLPs manage inflammation pretty well. For some people that struggle to manage inflammation, even with healthy lifestyle, GLPs, that's what it did for me. That's what I see it do for a lot of my clients. And coming off of that, you do then kind of release these inflammatory pathways that are being somewhat controlled by it.
Rest.
It should not be anything crazy. It really shouldn't, especially for the people that are on these low doses. But yeah, I've seen people that are on the really high doses. And I think honestly, some people need it. I get it. But I really don't believe that 12, 15 milligrams, I don't know. Maybe I'm not working with that level of obesity and diabetes. But like my father-in-law had, his A1C had gotten up to a 7.2. He's on the lowest dose and it's brought it down by an entire point. Not point, like 0.1, like an entire point. And so I really do believe that some people just need to give it some time and also consider the other aspects of your lifestyle that influence it. And if you are someone that is just trying to lose 10 or 15 pounds and is stressed out of your mind, doesn't eat enough to begin with, and it's not working for you, guess what? You probably need to look at other avenues. You probably need to repair and fix other things because it's too much of a stressor on your body. So that is the sleep one. Last one is stinky armpits.
I love this one. I made a reel about stinky armpits.
I saw
stinky breath. And it's like, there's a reason.
Oh,
it's not always like hygiene. I mean, of course, like if somebody's not brushing their teeth and taking a shower and using deodorant, or maybe sometimes, you know, when you're weaning off the natural or the aluminum based deodorants to like more of a natural, you have a little bit of a shifting there. But let's talk about some of the things that can contribute to this, and then what some of the smells can identify. If I have to guess, and I would love to know whoever asked this question,
I'll answer them.
If I had to guess, this is an ammonia cat litter smell. That's my guess out of the three that we're going to talk about. But when we think about this, what's happening? So again, mentioned this before, fat loss equals toxin release. So we have old hormones, we have lipid soluble metabolates. What does this mean? It means, you know, endocrine disruptors, chemicals, toxins in our environment, heavy metals, mold, mycotoxins, imbalances in mineral status in the body, a lot of things that can be happening here, parasites, candida, you know, and things that you may have taken in the past in terms of medications or whatnot. So the way that we eliminate in our drainage pathways, your skin is your largest surface organ. That shit's going to come out your skin. It's also a good window to the inside. Number one. Number two, you got to poo every day. You got to have adequate levels of electrolytes and hydration to eliminate and process, you know, through your kidneys and urine. And then bile, right? Bile binds and sequesters toxins. It's like your built-in detergent. So you can have a stronger body odor, which is basically a detox sweat. The second thing is if you are on a GLP-1 and you're doing more of a low carb approach, which generally happens, especially if your appetite's suppressed, or you're doing more of a, like a very low restrictive calorie work. So here in our practice, we would be doing autophagy because we're very intentional when we go that low with calories or fasting periods that we are getting ketones up, and those ketones and short chain fatty acids, this fatty acid metabolism can result in that sour ammonia-like smell or sulfur smells. And it's the same way that like a keto breath happens, which is not good. And then again, we've already mentioned this before, but the microbiome shift on the skin. So your skin has its own microbiome. Your vaginal canal has its own microbiome. Your oral canal has its own microbiome. Like basically your whole body is just bacteria. And so the skin bacteria can metabolize these things differently, and then that odor can compound. And we've already touched on this, but we're going to hit the nail on the head here again, just to drive this home: liver and bile backlog. Becca and I are going to present at the Hybrid Health Summit in April, all about bile. I was like, business? And he's like, no, gut. And I'm like, bile. Yeah. There it is. Because so many people don't understand this. And just if you're listening, you're like, what the heck is bile? Bile is secreted by your liver consistently. It is stored and concentrated up to 20 times potency in your gallbladder, if you still have a gallbladder. We see a lot of bile issues in different phases of life, especially pregnancy, postpartum, menopause, and a lot of this has to do with toxins and gut microbiome, but also estrogen. So this is really, really important. And I would say that 90% of the chronic constipation cases we deal with, it's a liver, gallbladder, bile issue. Mm-hmm. And yes, of course, there could be nervous system regulation, pelvic floor, nerve endings, all that kind of stuff. But when we can support your bile flow, we can improve that toxin removal through your bowels, through your urine. We can have adequate levels of fiber or binders in, and hydration, we can clear this up. So what does it generally look like in terms of smell? So I mentioned earlier, this is my bet. I'm going to bet $50 here.
Yeah, I messaged them. I'll find out.
Perfect. I'm going to say that it's more of an ammonia or cat litter smell. And this would be because this person is not properly breaking down their protein. So again, going back to digestion, it's a north to south process. If you are eating and consuming adequate levels of protein like you should be, because you're on a GLP-1 and you don't want muscle wasting, but you're not supporting stomach acid and digestive enzymes, your protein's not being broken down properly. And or you are dehydrated, and so your urea recycling issue here is resulting in this ammonia spill, because the bacteria will convert that protein waste into ammonia gas because of, again, the slow motility and the way that these, you know, slow down gastric emptying. So
we'll see that too on lab work when people have really low BUN levels or really low creatinine levels.
Yeah.
It's usually an indication that they're not taking in enough protein or their body's not breaking it down properly and it's not in the bloodstream adequately. So that's like the blood urea nitrogen level and then the creatinine levels. Both are metabolism of muscle and then waste product of protein. So if you're looking at your labs on a GLP, that's something we look for sure.
Yeah.
And then we have the onion sulfur smell. So the ammonia smell I think of as like very sharp and piercing. It's like chemical-y type smell. The onion sulfur smell, I think like rotten eggs. So this is usually sulfur gas overload, and we'll see this with poor detox and sluggish bile flow. Sometimes we'll also see this with overgrowth of sulfur-producing bacteria. A lot of times people are not able to convert sulfur into sulfate. It gets stuck in sulfite, and then it causes a lot of essentially gas production, and that gas is very smelly. We see this a lot with SIBO, and we see it a lot with constipation, obviously, because things are backing up and then fermenting. And then sweet and fruity smell. We'll see this more with yeast and fungal overgrowth. I see this also sometimes when people have a lot of discharge. So if people have a lot of like white discharge, some discharge is normal around ovulation. But I actually see this a lot with like yeast and candida overgrowth. And it can happen as well in the gut, and then it can cause blood sugar dysregulation, and your body starts smelling like what yeast eats and makes, which is fermentation of gas. I mean, I know, but it's crazy, but like that is what's happening. I think of like rotting ultimately. You know what I think of are the end of the world shows where the zombies and they like are mold. That's what I think of. Sorry, tangent. So
what do we do? What do we do?
Digestion. We talked about stomach acid support, bile support, digestive enzyme support, and looking into potentially like, do I need to get a GI map? Do I need to, you know, work with our team and evaluate my gut on a deeper level? Because maybe I had gut issues prior to even going on a GLP-1 and now they've much worsened. Metabolic, look at your eating patterns. Are you adequately eating? Are you ending up too low blood sugar because you aren't eating enough? And then are you electrolyte up? Are you electrolyted up? Are you taking in sodium and potassium and magnesium in adequate levels? More sodium in these cases a lot of times. Autonomic, blood pressure support with electrolytes, sodium again, particularly, and then detox. We have to be pooping. We have to be moving our body. We have to be sweating, getting our heart rate up at times. All of these things are extremely important. So that's what we got.
Practical fixes. Yep. Really quick here. What are we going to do about the diarrhea? Number one, this is where I think that you have to look at some of your triggers, right? So are you noticing that this is worse if you're eating higher fat meals, right? And the body just can't break them down. And so you're getting, you know, that blood into the digestive system. So digestive enzymes could be helpful here. Ox bile or taurine could be helpful. If you have a gallbladder, I would say taurine and or something like a beta TCP, which is a beetroot support. If you do not have a gallbladder, absolutely need to be on some level of ox bile and or TUDCA. Sometimes we'll use a combination there. Again, this is not medical advice. You should talk with your provider, but most of your providers aren't going to tell you this because they forgot when they removed your gallbladder to tell you the side effects. Maybe you could try eating smaller, more frequent meals, right? Reduce some of those fermentable carbohydrates. And then I would increase your soluble fiber. So you could use things like psyllium husk or oats, peeled boiled potatoes, ripe bananas, applesauce, love apple pectin. So you just make it in a crock pot with the skin on. Pectin's really great for the gut microbiome, cooked carrots, rice, barley, those types of things. Night waking. Number one, as Becca already said, like maybe move your injection to the morning, but make sure you have those electrolytes with dinner, a good amount of protein with fats at dinner. Yeah, you can still have some carbs, but you want to have those nutrients that are going to be more of the log burners. So carbohydrates are like the sparks to the fire. Your protein and your fats are the big logs that burn overnight. I would recommend like looking on Amazon and getting a Lingo, a continuous glucose monitor. Look and see what's happening with your blood sugar real time. Obviously, if you're waking up in the middle of the night, you're not going to get up and use a Keto Mojo to prick yourself at 1 a.m. I wouldn't want you doing that because you got to put the lights on and all of this. I'd rather you just have a continuous glucose monitor. Give yourself at least a week on that, maybe two. They do last for 14 days. I always ripped mine out early because they're so dang agitating, but they can give you a lot of valuable data. And then odor. So hydration, fiber, binders, bitters, digestive support, right? Breaking down your protein support, stomach acid support, liver bile support. Again, magnesium can be helpful here. But like Becca said, if you have other things that have already been going on, get to the root cause. Test and address. And if I were you, I'd be working with our team because we are the best and we will help you understand how to get to the root cause. What's going on with your body? What are your genetic predispositions? How are you going to get off these things? Or how are you going to cycle them if you're planning to keep them longer term? Because maybe genetically you are more prone to inflammation. And we do see that at a low dose, it can be really helpful, especially for people with histamine issues, mast cell issues. Like they can be super helpful, but at the same time, you can't negate all of these other things that we've been talking about in this podcast. So if you're ready to get to the root cause, link is in the show notes, fitmom.co. You can book a call with our team. It's a free 15-minute consult, and we can walk you through what we do and how we can help.